It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. Got a great show planned for today. We're going to be talking to Professor Don Morin from Quinn Sigerman Community College. We're just having a little trouble getting a hold of him for some reason, but I'm sure we'll work that out. We're also going to have, I was able to talk quickly the other day with Erin Devaney, the Registrar of Motor Vehicles. She was at one of our office openings, and just see what's going on with the registry and and our relationship with them. And also we're going to be reviewing the Chevrolet Trax, a little small sport utility vehicle. And also, you know, just some other things in the news that we have to talk about. And so we have a bunch of things we're going to be talking about, and we'll just kind of go from there. And so we have all that, and you can always find us in all kinds of places. You can find us online, the WROL Radio website. You can listen online. You can listen on the app. You can listen on TuneIn. You can listen on WROL on TuneIn. You can listen to Car Doctor Radio on TuneIn. And then, of course, you can find previously recorded programs both on the WROL webpage as well as my podcast page, which is johnfpaul.podomatic.com. So all kinds of places you can find this program, and you might find something interesting that you want to re-listen to. I know I actually re-listened to the guy from the wildlife company about storing your car away and trying to keep the different critters out of your car. In fact, I used that just recently. Well, I was at Quinn Sigerman Community College the other day and ran into old buddy Don Morin, who is a professor at Quinn Sig in their automotive program. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things, but including kind of the future of automotive repair and the need for technicians. Don, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's a great Saturday morning.
Except for it's like 21 degrees out. Except for that.
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah, you're going to go ride the bike a little this morning? No.
No.
No. but you and I have known each other for, I don't know, what, 20 some odd years, I guess now, and
oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
It goes all the way back to AAA days.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But you know, one of the things that, you know, we've seen over the years is really, you know, who's going to fix cars these days? And, you know, there's currently and kind of in the not too distant future, there's a real need for technicians out there, right?
Oh, definitely, John. There's a big shortage. It's a weekly basis. I'm getting phone calls from independent shops and dealers looking for, you know, qualified technicians. And I can't fill the need. I don't have enough students to go around.
Yeah, and that's I was at Bristol Plymouth Votec down in Taunton, and they're sort of the same way. And even though that's a high school, they said the kids that actually want to go into the trade, and they readily admit not every high school kid who takes auto shop wants to go into the trade. Some of them are just doing it because they want to figure out how to work on their own car, and they're going to either go to a regular college, or they're going to go into the military or whatever the case is. Others look at it a little bit differently, that they're you know, that this is their stepping stone into a career. And their school was the same way. They said if the kids they have, every one of the seniors that is ready is already out on co-op, and the juniors that they have that are ready, they'll be out on co-op starting in January. So they're, it's as much for the education as it is for the need for technicians. These kids are going out in co-op, and they're not just sweeping the floor. They're actually working.
Definitely. I've got four students right now who are sophomores. They'll graduate in May, and they're already employed at different dealers. last year's graduating class. The whole class is employed before they graduated. it's unbelievable. The students who want to work, the kids who want to work, have jobs waiting for them. And the dealers are sending, either alumni or other people down to recruit.
Yeah.
And that's unheard of. In 29 years that I've been teaching, we never had such a demand. We put students out there and they were hired, but we haven't had them knocking on the doors like we have now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know any shop I happen to stop into, almost everyone either has a help wanted sign out, or they'll say, if you know somebody who's looking for a job or looking to change jobs, have them come and see me. And whether it's a big solid chain like Sullivan Tire or a small two-bay shop, they're all feeling about the same way, and they're all feeling the same pinch. And so this really means that for somebody thinking about going into this business, I mean, this is a good, solid employment opportunity.
Most definitely. And, the cars are getting, let's face it, you and I both know, and I'm sure your listeners know, the cars are getting more technical. They're getting, more sophisticated with computers every day. And you and I are the age where we grew up, or we aged. when we were young, there were no computers in the cars, and we were working in the field, and now, it's taken over. And we need really bright young people to fix these cars.
Yeah.
I was talking to guidance counselors a few months ago, and I asked them, who do they want repairing their self-driving car in the future? Do they want someone good with their hands or good with their brain? And yeah. it kind of lit up their eyes a little bit, They said, we need somebody who's really competent and technically savvy.
Yeah, we have a AAA shuttle out in Las Vegas that maybe we could use somebody, because a truck ran. It's a self-driving shuttle, and a truck ran into it the other day. So
I read that.
So, but you're absolutely right. You look at that level of sophistication, or even something not as sophisticated. You look at something with a backup camera or a backup monitor system, and it gets banged around, and it has to go to a body shop, and the body shop knows how to fix the plastic and steel, but as far as recalibrating all the sensors, they got to send it to a repair shop to get it taken care of.
That's right. I mean, there are some cars out there, as you know, that you can't even change a light bulb without reprogramming the computer. So, that's where the demand comes in.
Right, and that's where the kids that are going into this, and not just kids either, but the people that are going into this, they're looking at, the old days of, kind of a funny story. A shop I worked in, they had the qualification to work in the shop, they had a little safe where they used to put, money during the day and their deposit overnight, and, if they didn't get to the bank. And the safe was probably 3 feet tall by 2 feet wide. And the owner of the business would go over and say, hey, can you pick that up? And, they'd get some guy over that would, grunt and groan and pick it up and put it back down. And that was basically the qualification of working in the shop, was you had to be strong. And,
right.
Those days are gone. Those days are absolutely gone. Today, your brain's got to be strong.
That's right. And it's just amazing how, the sophistication came through. I'm just looking out the window, and I'm looking at a brand-new Ford Fusion sitting in the driveway. And the sophistication in that car compared to 10 years ago is just unbelievable, or even 3 years ago, with the backup cameras, the sensors, remote start, which has been around for a while, but still, it's smart enough to know that you don't have the key,
right?
And it won't. No one can open the doors or anything while it's running. It's smart enough to know that, or I can control the sunroof from a phone app.
Yep.
I mean, that's the sophistication we're looking at here. And, And so when those, when they have to be repaired, there's a lot of thought process involved.
Yeah, no, I was talking to some kids one day, and one of them said, well, you know, nobody wants to get into repairing cars anymore. And I said to him, well, isn't that the job you want then? If the market's not flooded with people and the need is growing, you know, in leaps and bounds, all of a sudden that really increases your value. And the kid looked at me and said, I never thought about it that way. I said, you know, think about some of your friends that, you know, they're all going to school for the same thing, and all of a sudden now you're one of 1,000 applying for a job. Wouldn't you rather be one of one applying for a job when there's a real need? And the kid's like, I never thought of it that way.
Right, and they don't, and they're not led that way. There are so many people going to four-year schools, and they come out and there's no jobs for them. Or you can come to to our school, and we've got people lined up to hire you.
Yeah, no, absolutely true. And at your school, Quinsigamon Community College, you run your auto lab in a standalone building away from the actual college. But the kids have a choice of a 1-year certificate or a 2-year associate degree program, right?
Correct. Yep. We call the 1-year program the Ford Maintenance and Light Repair Program, and it's affiliated with Ford Motor Company. Students get credit towards their Ford Master Technician by taking online segments plus the training we give them, and they're all registered on the Ford Star site, so dealers can check their training history, and they can actually... They actually look for those students.
Yep.
We've also just last spring affiliated with Subaru, and we're also part of Subaru University, and that gives students another avenue for employment. And that goes more along with the 2-year program.
Yep.
And then, again, we have our associate's program, which is a lot more in-depth than...
Yep.
Than the certificate program, but both programs make you employable. It's just a level that you want to take yourself.
What's it cost roughly to go to Quinsigamon Community College for a 2-year program?
In-state tuition and fees. I'm gonna guesstimate, because things change with budgets.
Yep.
With books, probably around $11,000.
Yeah.
I'll say 11-ish. You know. In that area, there's a lot. You get a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, you compare that to either some of the private schools, or like you said, somebody who's got a 4-year degree in, you know, pick it, art history or something, and they come out of school and they have $100,000 worth of student debt and a job that pays $20,000 a year.
Right, and these. You know, our students can make real, you know, when you talk about money, there's a lot of opportunity to make real good money, and it's easier to pay off. The other thing is, you know, we've got an articulation agreement with Ben Franklin Institute in Boston, where our students can go in as juniors to their 4-year automotive management program. So we've got a lot of different avenues for students to go to. If they want to get into the management side, they can go to Ben Franklin. If they want to go right to work, they've got the 2-year associates. We've actually also have students who have transferred to Western Michigan University to take engineering. There's a lot of different avenues.
Yep.
It's not a dead-end career.
Right.
People thought... Back when I was younger, you know, there was a stigma that we were grease monkeys and that we, you know, it was a low-level job. And right now, with the shortage and the technology in the cars, technicians are becoming well-esteemed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, you look at that and you look at the, you know, where the future is. And you had two of your students at the meeting we were at the other day, and both of them were extremely well-spoken. And both of them said, you know, we're not quite sure where we're doing. We know we're staying in the field, but it might not be in the field as a wrench. It might be in the field as an automotive engineer.
Right. Those two students are really are really go-getters, and, yep. and they're both employed. I mean, that's another neat thing, and they're getting the experience at a dealership now, and they do want to somehow pursue engineering.
Right.
I'm not sure. We talk at, you know, every class we talk, and they've got some great ideas, and I'm just trying to nurture them now.
Yep. Now, one of the things you brought up that I thought was pretty fascinating was the way you interact with your students. You're not Professor Morin. You're Don. And you run that like it's a business. When they're in the shop, it's like you're the service manager and they're the techs, and they address you kind of on the same, you know, respectful level playing field that you would in a business.
Well, we're trying to prepare the students. In our program, we try to prepare the students for the real world.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it, you know and I know that the automotive industry is a tough industry to
right.
be in. And we kind of prepare them, you know, for what they're gonna see when they go out there.
Yeah.
And if it was, you know, if I was professor on a basis, it wouldn't be the same.
Right.
They wouldn't get the same learning out of it. And my whole philosophy is learning should be fun, and you should be enjoying yourself while you learn. So we do it like we would be in a shop. They,
yep.
they have, you know, I don't make them punch the clock and
yep.
punch on every job, but, you know, we talk and we treat each other the same way you
yep.
would be in a shop.
Yeah, and the same thing, just like you're in a shop and it's all of a sudden, for better or worse, it becomes a family, and all families, not everybody gets along. And I kind of like the idea that you really tell your students, you're going to run into all kinds of different personalities out in the real world, not just different customers, but different coworkers, and it's up to you to be able to work kind of within that group.
Right, and that's all part of the, you know, that's all part of the plan. When we started the program 30 years ago, both the instructors, my ex-partner, retired Ron, and I, we both come fresh out of the field,
right.
Ron from running his own shop, and I was a service manager at a Ford dealer. So we didn't start out as people with bachelor's degrees
mm.
or teachers teaching automotive. We were technicians teaching. We had to learn how to be teachers.
Right.
And it made it pretty interesting, and
yeah.
that's how we came about doing it the way we
yeah.
do. And it really has worked out. Like you mentioned, the family aspect.
Yeah.
I've got students in Hawaii and Florida, you know, graduates, alumni, and we still stay in contact. It and they always ask, how's so and so, you know,
yeah.
one of their classmates. Have you seen? Do you ever talk to whoever?
Yep.
It is a family atmosphere.
Yeah.
And one of the funny things is this: two students working in Detroit, or Dearborn, I should say, for Ford, and they've graduated within a year of each other.
Huh.
Peter and Scott. And
yep.
you know Peter.
Yeah, yeah.
They work in the same department, and when Peter hired Scott, said, "Oh, you went to QCC, you went to the asset program," and all of a sudden, bam! It was like a switch went on.
Yeah.
And then my name got mentioned. I found out.
Mm.
Next thing you know, I got an email from one of them, and you know, now we stay in contact.
Yeah. No, and that's what I always. Whenever I try to talk to students, whether it's in a high school or someplace else, I always try to tell them, you know, keep in touch with the people you went to school with. Not, you know, great for the relationship issue, but also, you know, all of a sudden one of your classmates might go to work at a Nissan dealer, and one of them might go to work at a Hyundai dealer, and one might go to work at a Ford dealer, and one at Subaru. And all of a sudden, if you're working somewhere and you kind of run into a dead end and you're a little you know, frustrated, you can't get any further, you call your buddy up and say, "Hey, look, I got a Subaru in the shop, and I'm running into trouble. Can you help me?" And all of a sudden, now you have a former classmate that's also can help you get through whatever problems you have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's all part of networking. It's just anytime you're in any type of business, the bigger your network, the better it is.
Yeah. I used to tell the kids, keep, these kids should be your Rolodex, but the kids don't know what a Rolodex is. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Those Rolodex is a thing of the past,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Networking is, is a great thing. And it's even if you're dead-end at a job and you're looking to move on and you've got an ex-classmate working somewhere else, it's real easy, they'll call each other, geez, we're looking, are you interested in moving on? And it's happened at a local dealer, in the Worcester area, where one student started a dealership, and then the next thing you know, he recruited his friend, his classmate, and now there's four classmates working in the same deal. They just kept recruiting each other, and it's in that dealership, there's like 8 graduates working there now. But it's all kind of network. All network each other.
No, it absolutely makes sense. If people want more information about Quinsigamon Community College, I know one place that I know what you're up to all the time is on Facebook. And
definitely.
But if people want more information about the college, is there a college website they can go on? I assume there is.
Yes, qcc.edu.
Okay.
I believe is our website. And I'm email me at dmoran@qcc.mass.edu. But we have the college has a great website. You can follow us on Facebook, Friends of QCC Automotive.
Mm-hmm.
There's some interesting posts on there. Change a cabin filter.
Yeah.
that's my new one. You saw the picture of my lovely cabin filter. We social media, we're using that as a tool more and more.
No, I cheaped out the other day. I pulled a cabin filter out of my 10-year-old car and knocked the bugs out of it and knocked the dust out of it, and I didn't put it back in. It still looked okay after I cleaned it.
Yeah, mine was all. We use social media to reach people, so far it's been fairly successful.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good stuff. Don, Thanksgiving's coming up. Have a great Thanksgiving. If you see a veteran today, give him a hug.
Definitely.
And we'll talk soon.
Yeah, it was good to see you on Monday, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, John.
All right.
Have a great holiday season.
All right, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That was Don Moore, and he is Professor Don Moore, maybe Associate Professor Don Moore. But Don, I've known Don for a long time, and I got to meet Don with the Ford AAA Auto Skills Contest, Ford started working together with AAA with the Student Auto Skills Contest, Don came on board, and just a good guy, real knowledgeable, real down-to-earth guy, just a good guy to talk to about everything and I joked with him about riding a bicycle, because he's become a pretty competitive bicycle rider, too, so riding on a 19-degree day, and he lives in sort of the northern part of Connecticut, and comes up to Quinsigamon Community College, and they work out of actually out of Worcester. But for more information, you can just Google Quinsigamon Community College on the web, and you can find out more information, and look for Friends of Quinsigamon Community College on Facebook, and you find out more information. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? When we come back, we're going to maybe talk about Chevrolet Trax, and kind of go from there. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. We will be right back.
Superstar. Honda Cars of Austin is Greater Boston's neighborhood Honda dealer with over 800 new Hondas available to choose from. Just 5 minutes from Boston on Route 99 in Everett, our beautiful new showroom makes your Honda Cars of Boston experience even better. Visit online at HondaCarsOfBoston.com and see all of our tremendous purchase, lease, finance, and certified pre-owned specials. Honda Cars of Boston on Route 99 in Everett is the place for great buys from the Honda guys. Give them a call at 1-800-65-HONDA.
Giant tire savings continue at all Sullivan Tire and Auto Service locations during our tremendous November sales event. Just in time for the holiday driving season. Buy three, get one free on all Goodyear and Kelly tires in stock. Plus, save up to $200 on select Goodyear tires, such as the new Goodyear Assurance Weather Ready Tire with all-season performance for tough New England weather. Check out our new website, SullivanTire.com, where it's now easier than ever to find your tires online and make service appointments. That's SullivanTire.com.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. We had some sort of technical glitch off the CD player, but we're still here. No matter what, we're still here. And who just walked in? My former producer, Dennis. I haven't seen him in a while. He's doing some work at one of the other radio stations. Always good to see somebody. And he was just saying he just got his associate's degree and going to work towards his bachelor's now. So congratulations to him. Hey, I want to talk about the car that got me here today, which was the Chevrolet Trax LT. It's a front-wheel drive small SUV. This week's test drive is one of the most popular SUV categories, and surprisingly one of the most popular, the subcompact SUV category. Our road test was in the latest Chevrolet Trax, specifically the LT model with front-wheel drive. All-wheel drive is available as an option. There's a base version as well as a more upscale premier trim level. Ours was sort of in the middle. Our tester was powered by a 1.4-liter Ecotec turbocharged engine connected to a 6-speed automatic transmission. The little engine produces 138 horsepower and 148 foot-pounds of torque. Fuel economy is rated up to 33 miles per gallon. I've been averaging just around 30 miles per gallon in a mix of city and highway driving. Performance around town is pretty good, but merging with fast-moving traffic requires full acceleration and finding your kind of perfect spot. It could use a few more horsepower. Now I'm watching Dennis leave in his Rogue, and that's the Star Wars Rogue version, the Rogue One version. I remember when he got that. On the road, the track feels pretty nimble, decent ride. It can get a little choppy over some of our less than perfect New England roads. Handling overall is pretty good, but when you push it, it tends to lose its grip a little bit. Overall, the track feels better suited to crowded city driving rather than cross-country cruising. Safety is addressed with 10 airbags, smart sensors designed to adjust frontal airbag inflation according to the severity of the crash. Our test car also had safety systems such as rear cross-traffic alert, blind spot monitor, keyless open and start, and something I like on a 19-degree morning, remote car start. As Paul Sullivan would say, remote car start, cheap in the building a garage, which is absolutely true. The Trax had some unique features for a subcompact sort of economy SUV. It had Wi-Fi, for instance. It has its own Wi-Fi hotspot in it. It also has a 110-volt outlet. I suppose if I wanted to, I could do my radio show right from the back seat with the Wi-Fi signal and 110 volts. I could plug everything I need in and make it all work. Speaking of the front seats, there's plenty of head and leg room. A lot of front seat leg room. You can put the seats, speaking of Dennis, he's 6 foot four-ish, maybe five, and he would even have enough leg room in this. Rear seat, well, not quite the same. Rear seat gets a little bit crowded. One of the things I found about the seats, though, when you first get in them, they feel pretty comfortable. After about an hour or so, not as much. They also tend to be a little on the short side. So under thigh support starts to limit a bit. Also, they tend to be a little bit narrow, or I'm too fat, one or the other. You know, for a little city car, the rear seat, like I said, has seat belts for three, but It will be definitely cozy if three people are back there. And if there were three big people, I don't think they'd fit. But certainly two adults can fit back there with a little bit of moving things around. Cargo storage, like many SUVs, especially in subcompact, is pretty versatile. It has about 19 cubic feet of space with the rear seat in use, which is okay. I mean, it's, you know, small vehicle. And with the seats folded down, you have about 48 cubic feet of space, which is quite a bit. And then the front passenger seat actually folds flat, so you could put something like, I'm guessing, a 6-foot stepladder maybe, something along that lines, maybe a surfboard, which I will never put in here. There are also a few bins, cup holders, three cup holders in the front. It must be two for the front and one to use for the back. And a USB power point, so instead of having to use a 12-volt cigarette lighter adapter to keep my phone charged up, I could just plug into the USB power point. That was kind of happy with that. Also, the Trax has Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, so you can hook your phone up and use your apps in your phone, which is so, you know, which so many people want to see. And of course, it has OnStar in it, so it has the ability to signal for help if you need it, unlock the doors if you need to, and get turn-by-turn directions if you want to. So the bottom line, this latest Trax is much better than the model I drove a few years ago, but it still needs some work. The interior has some nice quality and there's some nice features, but there's some areas that still need improvement in this very competitive SUV category. Base price of our test car was $22,900, as tested, $25,135. Crash tests, 5 stars across the board. EPA fuel economy, 25 city, 33 miles per gallon on the highway. And yes, in case you're wondering, the Trax does have a spare tire, because there are so many cars today that just don't. Our phone number, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Phone lines are open if you want to join us. If you have a question about your car, for instance, or something, you can just give us a call. Next week, we're going to be talking to Ron Merritt. He owns a company. He's an interesting character. He's an inventor, and he's invented all kinds of hundreds of products, I guess, or has patents on hundreds of products. But one of them is a kind of unique thing. It's a light-up license plate frame. And you can get it to say all kinds of different things. You know, you can one of the things I noticed on the website afterwards is you can actually have it say something like student driver. So, and what happens is when you step on the brake, it lights up. So it acts like almost a third brake light. It's completely wireless. It runs on a couple batteries. It lasts about 6 months. And you could also have it say Uber or Lyft. If you were an Uber or Lyft driver, you could have it light up when you step on the brake, so somebody knows you're an Uber or Lyft driver. Which this morning on the way here, I was driving through Braintree, and there was a Toyota Prius in front of us going about 5 miles under the speed limit, and They had a little, very faded Lyft sticker in the back window. And as we got to the middle of Braintree, he started driving slower and slower. She started driving slower and slower. I don't remember. And I kind of said to myself, oh, I bet they were slowing down the whole way to meet up with the person they were supposed to meet at a designated time, but also not exactly where they were going to be. So they kind of eventually pulled over, not quite in a parking space, waiting to find their Lyft customer. So if you had a little license plate that really lit up when they stepped on the brake, you could kind of go, oh, they're a Lyft driver, so you know they're kind of going to be a little bit lost. So anyway, I ordered one to give away, and we'll do that in the next couple of weeks once I get it, because I hate giving away stuff I don't actually have. And once I have it in my hand, and it's I went with something very generic. It's going to say Merry Christmas. So you can put it on your car for the Christmas season. So every time you step on the brake, the little license plate frame will light up and it'll say Merry Christmas. And you can also, once you get it, you can also get new inserts for it, so you can have it say other things too. You have it say Happy Hanukkah if you want.
Something else distracting.
You can have it say, I'm not sure about, I was thinking like number one Patriots fan, but I don't think they're licensed to use the word Patriots. So But you can, but they are apparently licensed to use some college teams and things like that. But anyway, our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Got some tips from Michelin about wintertime, and chances are if it didn't happen yesterday, it will happen today. Your low tire warning light will come on because your tire air temperature drops, tire pressure drops, and probably just enough to turn on your low tire light. So check your tire pressure. Tires lose pressure as the temperature drops, even if winter conditions are mild. Remember to check the pressure once a month or so. If you're driving where temperatures consistently approach freezing, consider a winter tire. And because this was from Michelin, they said like the Michelin X-Ice X1 or XI3, I guess it is, built for superior traction and handling in winter conditions. It really is true. If you're going to be out in the wintertime, and wintertime doesn't necessarily mean snow, very cold weather. This morning on the way here, I happened to see a Audi R8, very, very low-slung sports car, could have a V10 in it maybe. Those performance tires on that car are terrible in cold weather. They turn into basically hockey pucks. The rubber gets that hard because they're not designed. Those tires aren't designed to be out on cold weather. Same thing, I saw a Corvette right down away from, not a quarter of a mile away from the radio station this morning. And if it has the performance tires on there, once the cold weather hits, they're not the same sticky rubber they are when the temperature is above 40 degrees. So if you are going to drive your car year-round, something like a good performance winter tire will allow you to do that. I remember I was driving, it happened to be an Audi, I think it was an A6 Quattro, so a car that's generally very good in the winter, but it still had the summer tires on it. I drove it about a half a mile from my house and I turned around and came back with it because it just, there was I think an eighth of an inch of snow, but it was very cold out and the car just didn't perform well at all. About a month and a half later, I saw the same car with winter tires on it. I took it for a ride, and the performance was 1,000% better. It was just much, much better. Inspect all your lights. Make sure they're working. Examine your headlights and brake lights to ensure they're fully functioning, which are especially important during winter fogs or heavy snow. And if you're out there in the wintertime, make sure you clean all the snow off your car and off your headlights and taillights. Make sure your wipers work and they're in proper working condition by washer fluid with antifreeze solution to protect visibility. Ensure winter wiper blades are in good working order. Winter blades or some combination of winter blades will allow you to see better in a snowstorm because the fingers of the blade don't tend to get clogged up with ice. I think there might be actually Michelin Stealth blades, which is it kind of looks like a regular windshield wiper blade, but it has a covering over the framework, and it's not the big ugly heavy rubber covering. It looks just like a regular windshield wiper blade, but they tend not to build up with ice, which makes them work better, unless it's a snowstorm like that weird one we had last year that it was horrible whiteout conditions. It was kind of, it wasn't heavy wet snow. It was just wet snow, and you couldn't see, you know, 100 yards in front of you, and the wipers, just any wipers, even with the defroster set on full heat, full windshield mode, the wipers were just going to freeze up. So even the best wiper sometimes isn't perfect, but on the other hand, if you have something that is going to do a good job and do a better job for winter, you should try to use it. Always have an emergency kit. Carry an emergency kit with gloves, blankets, flares, shovel, flashlight, water, extra batteries, a cell phone charger, as well as emergency contact list and important phone numbers. Adding to this, you should carry medication too. If you're a diabetic, a heart patient, somebody who has to take medication on a periodic basis, you should always try to use that medication, you know, keep a little bit of that medication in the car just in case. If you're so old that you remember the blizzard of 78 where people were stuck in their cars for 3 days, or just even a couple of years ago where people were stuck in their cars for several hours, and if you needed your medication and didn't have it with you, a couple of whatever you need tucked away in your glove compartment or your emergency kit is a good idea. Check the battery. The number one or number two reason that AAA goes out and rescues people is dead batteries. Battery capacity is decrease significantly in cold weather. Yeah, when the temperature drops to about 32 degrees, you lose about 30% of the battery capacity. When it drops to zero, now all of a sudden you've lost about 50% of the battery's power to crank that engine over. So hot weather tends to kill batteries. Cold weather tends to really limit their effectiveness. So that 30-degree temperature takes away some of the performance. At zero, that battery's only really able to provide about 50% of the power needed to get the car going. So you need to start the winter with a good battery. And, of course, check your climate control and defroster to make sure that it is working just the way it should, because you want to make sure that everything is, you know, up to the right temperature. I got an email from somebody the other day that said they have poor heat in their car. They go out in the highway and they lose their heat. It happened to be a Subaru. My suggestion to them was, first off, look at the coolant level in the vehicle. Chances are it's probably low, which is why they're losing some of their heat. And chances are, I think it was an 07 Subaru, it might need a cylinder head gasket or cylinder heads, because some of the Subarus had a lot of problems with that. So you need to watch out for that. I had the opportunity to spend just a few minutes with Aaron Devaney from the Registrar of Motor Vehicles. And, Jeff, do we have that clip handy? So I was with Aaron at... And Erin Devaney she's been on our program before. She is the Registrar of Motor Vehicles for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I was with her at the Lawrence AAA office. In fact, we just started doing registry services in Lawrence, and we opened a new office in Tewksbury. When I was up in the Lawrence office, where we opened this RMV service center, my question to Registrar Devaney was, how well does the AAA RMV relationship work?
This is a perfect example of what a good public-private partnership can do for registry customers. We're very appreciative for the partnership with AAA Northeast, for expanding services to our customers, and the benefit that AAA offers Saturday hours at no cost to registry customers.
That's right. You know, people can come here on Saturdays, and the AAA members who come here, it helps with the line at the other end, right?
Absolutely. All registry customers benefit from this partnership, because the more people that take advantage of the AAA membership, the better off our lines will be at the Registry of Motor Vehicles.
And that was Registrar Devaney. She, like I said, she's been on this program. We talked several months ago about our relationship with the registry. And most recently, we talked about the new state inspection program. And I was talking to her, I asked her about that the other day, and I said, how's it going now? And right now, there are the same number of facilities giving out stickers as there was before the program changed. So they're back up in line, and they're back up where they should be. There's still a couple little hiccups here and there, which is to be expected. This was a very, very intensive change and a new vendor, and you expect to see some of those things. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Phone lines are a little quiet. Everybody must be cold today. So how about a trivia question? Why don't we do a little bit of trivia? So sort of, I try to keep the trivia sometimes related to the car that I'm driving. Well, this isn't a Chevy trivia question. It happens to be a GMC trivia question. And the question is, there was a model of the GMC Envoy, which was called an XUV. What was the XUV? What made the XUV unique in the GMC Envoy line? It was something that was one of those what's old is new again sort of things. Now, it's not a feature that's available anymore. It's a feature that was available for a couple of years that kind of made it a little bit different. The Envoy was introduced, back in the early 2000s, I guess. But what was the feature that made the GMC Envoy XUV a unique vehicle? If you know the answer to that, we will give you some sort of a prize. I don't know exactly what it is yet. Some sort of a prize. Maybe it's not too early. Maybe the prize will be a couple tickets to the Boston Auto Show coming up after the first of the year. We'll see about that. I think that I think that's a good prize. I think that's what we'll do. We'll give away two early tickets to the Boston Auto Show. If you know the answer to trivia, and the trivia question is, what made the GMC Envoy XUV a unique vehicle? Give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Well, in 2018, the LaCrosse, and I don't even know how to pronounce this, A-V-E-N-I-R, and that's Buick sub-brand, that's their classy brand, is offering two ways to experience the highest expression of Buick luxury, like the 2018 Enclave that went on sale in early October, the LaCrosse Avenir Sport, unique styling, a laundry list of standard content, along with exclusive wheels and finishes. The LaCrosse gets a similar three-dimensional mesh grille, lower grille with chrome wings that Buick first debuted, the stunning concept car in 2016. And this still goes back to, I still say this goes back to years ago when I heard that they want to try to make Buick as luxurious as a Lexus, and they seem to be going certainly in that direction. On the mechanical front, motivation of the Buick will come from a 310-horsepower V6, which is paired to a 9-speed automatic transmission. Shoppers can also opt for an optional twin-clutch all-wheel drive system, dynamic drive package with real-time dampening, along with the company's suite of active safety features. So it really looks like this will really go kind of an upscale type of thing. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Richard. Hey, Richard.
You know there, I've been shopping for a car with a friend who's trying to go from a 1999 Grand Marquis. He's looking for something with a bench seat or something that rides like a car. And he bought it brand new, but it's been a nightmare, to say the least. Any suggestions?
Find another 1999 Grand Marquis.
Telling him go with a pickup truck, but it's not
yeah.
the same thing.
Yeah, he's not gonna even as good as new pickup trucks ride. He's not gonna ride as good as his Grand Marquis. It's funny. He's a CEO of a company, and he always had a Ford Taurus, so a late model Ford Taurus, and he said, you know what, it's about time I stopped being so cheap and I bought a luxury car. And he said, you know, I'm what do you think I should buy? And I said, what do you want? And he said, well, I want a car that's as roomy as a Taurus and rides just as well. And I said, well, you need another Taurus. And he goes, no, I want something. He said, I'm not really, it's not really that I want to show off, but he said, it kind of seems like, and he's probably in his mid-50s, and he's like, I think it's finally time that, you know, I have a car that, you know, kind of, you know, I think I can afford just about what I want to afford. And he ended up actually going with a Lexus LS, the big Lexus, because it was the only thing he found with the room he wanted in it, just like his Taurus had plenty of leg room. And the ride that he got, and it, you know, has a Lexus badge on it, so it made him feel real happy, and that's what he ended up getting. But I think, you know, to get something similar to that car, first off, it's so hard to find anything with a bench seat anymore. The last thing I saw with a bench seat was a Toyota Avalon, and I'm not sure they even have bench seats anymore. But that would be one car that I think would probably come close to what he may be looking for ride and room and maybe the seating of it. But as far as a true bench seat, I don't think you're going to find it anymore. I can't think of anything right now that has a bench seat in it.
Is that a safety issue that they're dumping, or are they stealing a page from the airline, make it as uncomfortable as possible and screw them on the price?
I just recently flew Allegiant, so, yeah, you might be onto something with that. Some of it is that because better airbag placement happens when you're sitting, you know, when you're sitting directly in front of the airbag, and having that center position makes it harder to have the airbags work properly and not be on the edge of it one side or the other. So that's probably certainly part of it. And I think it's also just what I know that when the Toyota Avalon had a bench seat, I want to say less than 5% of the cars ordered were actually ordered with a bench seat. So I think it was just really, you know, what customers were looking for, and it just wasn't the customers that wanted it. So I think he's going to kind of, I think he's going to be kind of stuck, and you know, maybe look, you know, maybe, you know, for comfort and convenience wise, look at a Taurus, look at an Avalon, but everything that I've driven that's sort of in the Grand Marquis size, only has seating for five people.
All right. Next so, thing. Are they coming out with a small pickup truck?
Who? Ford?
Or anybody?
Yeah.
They got rid of the small ones, and everything I looked at recently was humongous.
Yeah. The problem is the small pickup trucks, even the new small trucks, are pretty big. You know, the Chevrolet Colorado and the GMC Canyon, if I don't have those backwards, those are still good-sized trucks. In fact, when you see one parked next to a, you know, 1500 or an F-150, they look pretty formidable size-wise. I keep telling anybody who will listen, I think there is still a market for a truck the size of an old Ford Ranger, a truck the size of an old Toyota Tacoma. About the, you know, even the Tacoma has gotten bigger over the years. Same thing with the Nissan pickup. They're small truck. They're really mid-sized trucks now, not small trucks. And I still say there's a good market for a pretty basic truck that, you know, has a pretty plain bed, a little extended cab, and, you know, not a $40,000 or $50,000 truck. Ford is coming out with an all-new Ranger pickup truck, and I haven't seen anything other than some drawings of it. In fact, last year at the Detroit Auto Show when I was out there, all they really did was announce the name. They didn't even have a picture of it, let alone a mock-up of what it was going to look like. I assume it won't be a small truck. I think it will be kind of a mid-size pickup truck, which if you're going to buy a mid-size truck, the fuel economy is not a whole lot different than a full-size truck. So, you know, you might as well buy the full-size one because sometimes they're even cheaper.
Yeah, the Nissan Frontier is as big as an old Ford F-150.
Oh yeah,
that's considered small.
Right, and it's not, and it's anything but small. The same thing with the Colorado and Canyon, even the Tacoma. And if you decide, oh, I'm going to get the four door version, which you know is actually pretty good. You know, other than it's a little bit easier to park than the full size ones, and some of these big trucks, A couple weeks ago, I drove, now this is kind of an anomaly, but I drove the F-150 Raptor. The thing is 6 inches wider than a standard F-150. The thing was huge, but even at that, I drove a GMC 1500. It's a big truck, and you all of a sudden now you have to choose your parking spaces, and and the sad part is most of the time when you see any of these full-size trucks going down the road, there's usually one person driving it, and there's nothing in the bed.
All right, next question. Are all the cars going to have the backup camera? Is that practically mandatory?
Yeah, it was supposed to happen. It was supposed to happen either 2017 by law or 2018. I don't remember which, but they are all supposed to have them in one form or another for safety purposes. And some cars, frankly, really need them. Some cars have a ton of blind spots in it, and just to be able to see a little bit behind you, not such a bad idea.
I loved your comment about summer tires. My car is a Nissan Versa.
Okay.
And it came from Florida. I would have sworn if I didn't know that remember from the old days the tires had flat spots.
Yep.
I would have sworn there was something wrong with it. And after about 20 miles, it finally flattened out. But I sat there going, this is going to be a long winter unless I buy new tires.
Yeah, and some of that may be, if that car sat still for a long period of time in the Florida heat, you know, if it sat for 3 or 4 months and didn't move for whatever reason, It's amazing how tires can get almost sort of a permanent flat spot in them. And that's why dealerships a lot of times will kind of move their cars around, not just to wash them and, you know, put the cars in the back and the front and the cars in the front and the back, but to try to prevent flat spots in the tires. Because it still can happen. Not as much as when tires had a lot of nylon in them, but it still can happen. And performance tires, because they have nylon for strength, you get in it, you'll swear you had four flat tires for the first 5 minutes of driving when the tires are cold.
If you were trying to sell my car this morning to somebody, you would have lost it by the time it got out of the parking lot. It was so bad. And I kept thinking, okay, Sullivan Tire is going to get some business out of me, but it's just a question of when do I find this, like anything else, when do I find the time?
Yeah, I know. I understand what you mean. You wouldn't. You don't have any free time. You couldn't swing by my house and rake some leaves, could you?
Leaf blower is the only thing that you can use. Don't use the rake. Remember, you're raking the chicks in the leaves to you.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
A leaf blower, you blow everything away and you irritate your neighbors.
Yeah. I'll let you know, I wrote an article once about using a leaf blower to dry off your car. And, you know, I'm just an electric leaf blower. And I said, you know, it's a good way. It's not a whole lot different than, you know, what happens at the car wash. But if you wash your car and you want to wax it right away, get out your leaf blower, blow off your car, dries it off right away. It gets the water out of the little nooks and crannies in your car. And I got more hate mail from, apparently there's a leaf blower hating group in Newton or Brookline or somewhere over there that way that told me that I'm a horrible, horrible individual for suggesting it. So,
well, if you've ever been in lime country, just remember it. You're standing in the middle of the pile of leaves, and the chicks are sitting there going, "Thank you. You just raked yourself right up to me." And all I was, if you have a leaf blower, if they can handle 130 mile an hour winds, well, that's my kind of chick.
Richard, good luck with the car shopping.
I keep sitting there going, just buy something buy a color you like and just get it over with.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's worth doing, some of the big, you know, some of those big used car lots like CarMax, where they have, you know, it's a big use, even though your friend might not be wanting to buy used, but they have, you know, they might have 300 different, you know, 300 cars for sale on the lot. Well, all of a sudden now you walk around and you're like, oh, there's a one-year-old Ford Explorer. There's a two-year-old Jeep Cherokee. There's a two-year-old Buick LaCrosse. And all of a sudden now you can just kind of go from car to car and go, you know what? This is kind of nice, but if you want to buy new, you can buy new, and maybe buying used might be a better value sometime. But at least then you have the variety of it where you can actually go and look and see what might fit, rather than have to go to a Chevy dealer and a Ford dealer and a Buick dealer and, you know, one dealer after another. And you can spend maybe an hour or so at a big place like CarMax, and then all of a sudden now you can narrow down the choices a little bit.
Well, I thank you for saying that, but I was yelling at him because I said, you live in a used $400,000 house. What's wrong with a used car? And he saw, oh, I want the smell. And I'm like,
You can buy the smell in a can. It's $3.99.
So just, when you get to past 50, they disconnect your senses. And he's a nice guy and he can afford stuff, but I wish he'd just get it over with.
There you go.
Can you sense my frustration?
Yeah, well, you know. Go ahead.
One comment about your radio show. Every time I went to call you folks for anything, the phone always rang. And, you know, I'd be listening to your show, and about 10 minutes into it, I said, why is that a question? The phone would ring. It was frustrating because I'd be left alone for an hour, and all of a sudden, oh, click. By the way, it's an outstanding show, and AAA is a fantastic service. I'm not putting a plug, but I'll bash people when they deserve it. But AAA's been doing a really good job.
Well, thank you.
And people should admire it, especially since where I live, they've yet to figure out where the registry's going to put a new location. I live in the North Shore.
Oh, yeah.
And they've tried for 3 years to find a location. And,
well, the, the, the plan is every one of our AAA offices will have some form of registry service by the end of the year. We have three more offices to go. By the end of the year, all the equipment will be in place, so you'll be able to renew your driver's license, do your registration. In fact, if the registry allows it, we'll do anything they want us to do. So, you know, as long as we can do it with our help and on our time schedule, we're happy to do it. So,
all I have to do is be a AAA member. Such a deal.
All right.
Hey, thank you. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Bye bye. 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030. What do we got going on? We have guesses for trivia? Let's see. We'll let Jeff do his job. Lincoln might be rolling out a new version of its Navigator SUV soon, but Cadillac is using an old lure to catch new buyers, according to an article. They're offering $5,000 off a new Escalade for any buyers trading in a Lincoln made since 1999. This is according to a memo obtained by Bloomberg, which was subsequently confirmed by GM. Lincoln hasn't redesigned the Navigator since 2006, but the new Expedition brother comes So you get a new Navigator. Of course, it makes sense. The Escalade was last redesigned in early 2014, but that could make it look old against a brand new Lincoln. The Lincoln Navigator is probably not the one I saw at the auto show with the whole right side that opens up and what's his name, the guy who does the Lincoln commercials, the actor, whatever his name is, he was there. Look for Ford to, I'm sure Ford will say, okay, Ford will look at that and, you know, $5,000 applies to purchases or leases and buyers still qualify under other offers. So if you're driving a Lincoln and thinking about a big SUV, this could be your time. I mean, it's actually, if you drive a 1999 Lincoln and you want to buy an Escalade, that's a pretty good deal, $5,000. And on top of any other incentives. So we're still looking for an answer to trivia. What made the GMC Envoy XUV a unique vehicle? And we'll see if anybody knows that. Also, if you just want to call with a question, 617-770-3030. Let's see. I think we got Paul. Let's see if we got Paul. Paul, is that you?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. How can we help you?
The roof slid from the tailgate forward, like a sunroof, but
it did.
Slid open.
It did.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have a Matchbox car that's very similar to the same thing.
I bet the Matchbox car is a Studebaker.
Actually, I don't know. It's in my basement. Oh. Those Matchboxes are from at least 50 years old.
Well, in 1960, Studebaker made a car called a Wagoneer. And it did basically the same thing. The roof slid forward, and you could put tall stuff back there. The idea behind this was it was supposed to give you the something like an SUV, but something like a pickup truck. And it sounded like a pretty good idea when they were building it. In fact, the only time I ever saw anyone really use it, I saw the roof slid forward and someone had like a big china cabinet standing straight up in it. I said, well, that's actually a pretty unique idea. But it only happened for a couple of years. The idea was supposed to be like a pickup truck and a Chevrolet Avalanche kind of combined together so you could be, and I don't think it really worked, but the XUV was reminiscent really of, I think it was a Studebaker Wagoneer is what they called it. So I bet that's what your Matchbox car is a Studebaker Wagoneer.
I'll look it up and I'll let you know, but I also agree with you, it was a good idea because you could lock it.
So
if you had something in there, you could lock it, unlike a pickup truck.
Right. Right, yeah. In fact, the funny thing is some of these tailgates now in some of these pickup trucks, like Ford has a tailgate with a built-in step, and you flip the tailgate down and you pull the step out, and it turns into like a little ladder, so it makes it easy to get in the back of the truck. And apparently those are a very hot theft item. People are actually stealing the tailgate.
Too, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah.
I kind of wonder what the reliability of that was, though, especially in the New England winters.
Well, yeah, I think about all, even when I look at trucks with power running boards, You know, the running board folds out, and then, you know, they at least put a switch on them so you can leave them down in the wintertime so they're not constantly trying to grind up snow and salt and sand. But, yeah, you look at all of those things that seem like it would be a far better idea for Arizona than it would be for New England winters. But, in fact, one of my coworkers just recently bought an F-150, and he got a hard cover for the back of the truck, and the cover in conjunction with the tailgate, he can actually lock the whole back of it now, which makes it a little bit more secure. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, Paul, stay right there, and Jeff will take down your name and address, and we'll send you out a prize as well as a couple of tickets for the Boston Auto Show when it comes up after the first of the year. Okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Stay right there.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And let's see. Let's go over to Rick. Rick, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, hey, what's going on?
Well, I got a question for you. I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, but in the states that have legalized marijuana for the last couple of years, the accident rate has gone up. Have you heard anything about that? Do you have any statistics?
Well, it depends. It depends who you believe. People will tell you in Washington State the crash rate's gone down. Other people will tell you in Washington State the crash rate's gone up. The problem is, and here's the whole problem with marijuana, cannabis, weed, whatever you want to call it, is there's no really good way to test for impairment. They use, you know, blood tests, but still they're measuring the amount of THC, but something more chemically sounding than that, in your blood system. But, you know, we pretty much know that when someone's at 0.05 with alcohol, they're partially impaired. When they're at 0.08, they've gone over the legal limit and they absolutely shouldn't drive. With marijuana, they still haven't totally figured it out yet. And I know now in Massachusetts, where recreational marijuana is legal, every time I'm behind a car that looks like it's, you know, just came out of a Cheech and Chong movie, I'm like, I'm thinking that doesn't look safe to me. So again, the law enforcement, I was just at an event, and law enforcement is still trying to figure it all out. So, you know, has the crash rate gone up? It would make sense. It probably did. But if you talk to the advocates, they will tell you it's actually gone down. Or it hasn't changed, one or the other. So I think it's Washington State and
Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. Yeah, yeah. So it's like everything else. Numbers. You believe what you believe when it comes to numbers, I guess. So,
well, to me, it would seem like, you know, if 2010 you had it was illegal and you had X number of accidents, and 2016, you had X number of accidents and it's legal, you would know whether it went up or went down.
Yeah, you would think it would be that easy, but it's not. So,
in other words, the politicians, you know, on either side of the issue are skewing the numbers or telling half-truths or whatever.
Well, I don't even know if it's that. I think they just don't know how to statistically look at it yet, because not all crashes they measure for impairment.
I'm asking impairment, yeah. Just the number of crashes.
Yeah. The difference is, overall, for years and years and years and years across the country, there was 42,000 motor vehicle related fatalities, and that was kind of the way it's been for years. 2 years ago, it went down to about 35,000. It's closing back in on 40,000 now, and that isn't, you know, that 5,000 isn't because of those couple of states that have legal marijuana. That 5,000 has more to do with, there's more people on the road. There's more employability, so more people are working, and gasoline's cheaper than it was a few years ago. So, and you know, people are driving faster. So you combine all of that together, and now suddenly you have higher crash rates and more fatalities. So, crash rates and fatalities are up, but not just in those two states; they're up in all 50 states. and I'm kind of generalizing, but they're up in Massachusetts and they're up in Rhode Island. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like with alcohol, it took the government years to come up with a reasonably reliable test, you know, field sobriety test and then blood test, you know, breathing test and stuff like that. And so I expect that to be the same thing with marijuana.
Yeah.
But,
no, I think you're right, and that's gonna it is gonna take some time, and that's why some of the delays were in place because of that. But law enforcement still hasn't got it 100% figured out yet, and it has nothing to do with them. It's just the chemistry isn't there yet. So,
oh yeah,
and, okay. You
know, the people are gonna come up with a decent test. It'll just take a little time.
Yeah,
but I'm just wondering about the overall statistics and that. So.
Yep.
I know where I am on this issue.
I'm kind of guessing where you are. So, okay, Rick, take care.
Okay.
Yep. Bye bye. Okay, let's go over and talk to Mike. Mike, is that you? Is that you, Mike? Mike? Nope. Mike, is that you, Mike?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can. There you are.
Okay, Magic Electronics. First, I want to thank all our veterans for Veterans Day.
As do I.
Hey, and quick, I think my question is quick, but certainly a great segue from your last question. And that is, what are we doing with the hands-free driving in this state? Why haven't we, initiated a law that makes holding a cell phone while you're driving illegal? I wonder if AAA had to...
We're trying. And even though we are 100% behind the hands-free bill, we know through studies done with the University of Utah, I think, that if you are hands-free, you're not really that much less distracted than you are when you're actually have a phone in your hand. But the one reason, one of the major reasons we're in favor of a hands-free bill, and there is I think currently two or three bills at the State House right now, and we support all of them in one form or another, is one of the worst things you can do when you're behind the wheel is text, because then you're taking your eyes and your hands off the wheel, and you're looking at your phone and you're trying to compose a text message or read a text message, and 96% of the population can't multitask. I mean, everybody can multitask, but only about 4 or 5% of the population can truly do two things at one time. But what happens with law enforcement, if you're driving down the road and you look like you're texting, a cop can't say if you're texting or you're scrolling through your phone looking for a phone number. Where if we went to a hands-free law, when a cop saw you with a phone in your hand, the assumption would be that you're texting or talking on the phone. But what happens is it makes it much easier to enforce a texting law. I saw someone texting the other day, and I bet they crossed two lanes of traffic. Fortunately, I was behind them. But I saw them, cross two lanes of traffic trying to compose a text message or read a text message or whatever they were doing. And, if it was pretty obvious to me, but on the other hand, it just makes it that much easier, which, again, is one of the reasons why we are absolutely in favor of a hands-free cell phone law in every state, not just Massachusetts.
Well, I think that my question is also, which I find, like in the summertime, I drive my little Miata around. And what I find is that the person, particularly the left-handed person, is absolutely blind on that site because they're holding the phone in front of peripheral vision.
Yep.
And I think that's a bigger problem than
that's absolutely you're absolutely right. That's one part of it. If everybody had a standard shift car, then it would limit phone use a lot, wouldn't it?
Sure would. Do you have time for one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, real quick, I noticed that reading this week's Auto Week that the new Lexus, the big Lexus,
yep,
has come out with a six-cylinder engine in it with twin turbos. You and I have had this conversation before, awful lot more moving parts in that car. Do you think the reliability would be there to get 200K out of a car like that, two-ton car?
I think out of the engine, absolutely. Out of the turbos, I'm not so sure. But the engine itself, I mean, you think about it, you know, to maintain 65 miles an hour on the highway, even with the 4,500-pound car, you probably need 14 or 15 horsepower. So, you know, most of the time the engine's going to be loafing. You're not working very hard. If you're somebody who drives with your foot to the floor all the time, well, it's going to spool the turbos up. You're going to run 10, 12 pounds of boost. You're going to make the engine work that much harder. You know, could you get that kind of mileage out of it? Typically, from what I understand watching engineering done, most every engine and transmission today is being tested at 175,000 miles. So they're running reliability tests right up to 175,000 miles. And, you know, and the engineers tell me sort of off the record, they're doing that, but they're also saying that they think there's another, you know, 30% window on top of that, and that's how they feel comfortable about it. But they test up to 175,000. So I think that, you know, 2.5-ton Lexus will go a couple hundred thousand miles without any problem. But if you drive like you're in pursuit mode all the time, it might still go 200,000 miles, but it might do it with a little bit extra oil consumption. And, you know, if you're not doing the maintenance, it may be a little harder to do it. But if you drive like a relatively sane, normal person, I don't see why it wouldn't do that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Again, all right. Happy back. All right. Take care. Bye-bye now. Let's get to one more phone call here. I think we have James on the phone. James, is that you?
Yes, it is me.
Yes, sir.
I have a quick question for you before I go over to see Junior D'Amato.
Okay.
He usually works on my car. I have a Chevy Caprice.
Yep.
Yeah, a vintage Chevy Caprice. And the question is, I went out, got in the car to start it, and lately I've been starting it, and the RPMs went way up to like 70.
Oh, okay.
And then drops back to 30.
Mm-hmm.
And goes back to 70 and 30, up to 70 and 30 continuously for about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it calms down and acts normally. I was wondering what if you knew what...
How vintage is this? What year is it?
Oh, I've had this car since 1993.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it could be any number of things, really, but it could be that it's something like the throttle plate is starting to gum up in the engine, and that's kind of giving you a bit of a problem. You know, so it could be just a matter of a good cleaning. I'm guessing it's the V8 engine in this.
It's the small 8, yeah.
The small 8, yep. And yeah. You know, that would be sort of where I would start to look and see if there's something there. The other thing I would look at, and this is going to happen, is if there is a good-sized vacuum leak, what will happen is as soon as you go to start it up, the engine will try to make up for the vacuum leak. So it will race the engine up, it will race the engine down, it will race the engine up until it finally finds its spot and settles down. And there's an electronic throttle actuator that tries to keep the car from stalling. That could be caused by a great big vacuum leak. And pretty common in those small block Chevys is the PCV hose, the hose that goes to the PCV valve, collapses and then has a hole that kind of burns through it. And when that happens, all of a sudden now you have a vacuum leak, so it can affect how the car idles and runs. So it could be... it could be a bad electronic throttle actuator. It could be just a big vacuum leak. It could be any number of things that could be part of it. But, you know, the best thing that's going to happen, if you can get it there and he can get it when it's cold so he can see what it's doing, that's the best thing to do.
Yeah, because once it warms up, it's fine.
Yeah, so, you know, once it warms up, it's going to be a little harder to find. But, like I said, there's a series of... pressure regulator, you know, there's a throttle regulator there, and it looks at a couple different things, and you know, and it's still even controlled by the computer, and there's a thing called an idle air control valve, so it's the valve that opens and closes that adjusts the idle, and if that idle air control valve is sticking, Well, that's going to be this problem. So, you know, at this age, it's, what did you say? It was 93, 2003, 2013, 2007. It's an antique. It's an actual antique at this point. So,
yeah, but I like it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. But no, I think, like I said, I think the best thing to do would be try to get it there, and if you can leave it overnight so he can start it up when it's cold, you know, if not, at least they can do a little bit of, you know, quick checks, just look for vacuum leaks, sticking idle air controls, things like that.
Yeah, that's good information.
Okay.
I'm going to take it to Junior anyways, your buddy.
All right.
And I'll leave it overnight because I'm retired, so I don't need the car.
There you go.
Yeah, I got this car back in 93. From the state police up in Maine, a captain was driving it.
Oh, all right.
And it was all highway miles, so when I bought it, it was low mileage.
Is it actually a pursuit car? Is it actually got like the certified speedometer in it and heavy duty suspension?
Oh, it has everything heavy duty. I still have all the original parts on the car except for routine maintenance.
There you go.
It's really been golden.
I want to
keep it.
Sounds like it's a good car for you. So I would continue to hang on to it.
I will. We just use it now to go shopping. That's all.
There you go.
Well, I'm gonna pick up the Junior anyhow.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And
I appreciate the call.
All right. You take care now.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye now. Well, we're running close to running out of time, and. Apparently, our buddy Paul Sullivan's still a little under the weather because there's a brilliant Bobby Brooks right there.
Yeah, that's right. No, yeah, Paul has another week of a little R&R, so I'm stepping in on this fine, frigid day.
It's a little chilly, isn't it?
Well, it's chilly, but you know something? This past week, I was in Bismarck, North Dakota. And it was 5 degrees Thursday morning when I woke up with flurries. So
was that the equivalent of like frostbite falls?
Yeah, something. Yeah. I don't know how people live there. I mean, some awesome people. I met some great folks. I had to go up there from work and do some training, but tremendous people. Different things. So the people talking about their side things. They do the rodeo and they have 100 head of cattle.
Yeah.
And they plant this, that, and the other. So different thought process than us in New England. That's for sure.
I know I was up in Canada once and I asked, how do you deal with the cold up here? And they just looked at me and said, flannel pants. And I guess if you dress for it, I was in a class a couple weeks ago and two people in the class were from Alaska. Right. And first, and it was in Florida. First off, they didn't know what to do, and then they said, you know, when it's 40 degrees, we're still walking around in short sleeve shirts because 40 degrees is a nice balmy day up in Alaska.
Yeah,
so
you get that right. That's for sure. Yeah, all good stuff. But yeah, we have a great day planned today. I mean, clearly today is Veterans Day, so all three of us today, and I know Johnny and Seamus will be paying special attention to our veterans. You don't want to, Bill Bailey does this show every year. I look so forward to his show because it's really just committed to all that. So we'll be throwing in some nice patriotic stuff today with the regular Irish tunes and trying to keep everyone warm today. That's
yeah. There you go. You know, it was funny. It was kind of funny. I was in my basement today, and I don't have a lot of stuff from my father. And in my basement, there was some old currency from Italy, and apparently the GIs back then would sign it. They would autograph, they would put their name on it, and when they met a GI from someplace else, they would just swap it back and forth. So they knew that John Paul, I met him somewhere, and he gave me and I had like 5 or 6 of these bills left, and I didn't know why it had my father's name on it. I did a little information on the internet and found out, well, that's why they did it. So they had something to trade back and forth, and I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah,
real cool. It looks like, I think Jeff's trying to push us out. I hear that.
I think so too. There's a piano guy. So Jeff's just telling us we got to go. Hey, up next, Bobby Brooks filling in for Professor Paul Sullivan on this Veterans Day. If you see a veteran somewhere, buy him a cup of coffee, do something. Tell him thank you for the service. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.